is part two. We started a series, I'm not sure if it's going to be two or three, I suspect it might be three, called How to Break Bad Habits. And we introduced it by saying that, you know, I have a lot of bad habits. You have some bad habits. Some of them are obvious and some of them are not so obvious. But one thing is certain, they mess up our lives and they keep us from becoming everything that we're meant to be. Now, you can deal with your bad habits by going to Borders Bookstore. There'll be any number of books that will tell you how to break your bad habits, and they're not bad. They'll give you some inspiration, and maybe for a few days or for a week or maybe even as long as 6 months or in rare case a year, it'll help you to break one of those bad habits that's messing up your life. But the problem with these is that they all tell you something like, take control of your life, you know, like, take control of your life. I can't even take control of a single day, what to speak of my whole life. You know, who's in control? Raise your hand, you know. Who's in control? Who can take control? It's like telling a man who's falling from a skyscraper, stop falling. Well, you know, he'd love to stop falling, but it's not within his control. So we can't take control of our life because we don't have control of our life. And so that type of advice is not very helpful. We made an acrostic. And if you follow all these nine steps of the acrostic, you can break any bad habit that you want. Last week we talked about the first three steps, and this week we'll talk about four, five, and six. Maybe we'll get through it, but I kind of doubt it. But the acrostic is B-R-E-A-K-F-R-E-E. What does that spell?
Break free.
Break free, okay? So B last week was begin today. Don't put it off, because every day that you pursue a habit, it becomes more deeply ingrained. And our catchphrase for that particular aspect of breaking habits was, one of these days is none of these days. One of these days I'll give up drinking. One of these days I'll get over my resentment for something that happened in the past. One of these days I'll stop worrying and get a good night's sleep. One of these days I'll stop lifting things from Walmart. But not today. Not today. One of these days is none of these days. So if you're going to break a bad habit, first thing you have to do is begin right now. You have to send the Lord within the heart a signal. I am going to discontinue this habit as of right now. I'm going to disassociate myself from it from now. You need to send a clear, strong, unequivocal signal to the Lord within the heart. Otherwise, if you say, well, tomorrow will be a good day, or maybe next Thursday will be a good day. In the meantime, I'll keep taking my pills, or I'll keep eating myself with worry or resentment. You're not sending the Lord the kind of signal that He wants to hear. He's given us free will, but He's not going to step in and interfere with our free will. We have to exercise our free will, but we have to exercise it decisively and unequivocally. We can't be wishy-washy about it. If you send the Lord an unequivocal message that you're sick and tired of this habit and you want His help and you're going to begin right now, then He'll kick in and help you out. Otherwise, don't count on it. Second thing is refuse to blame others. We've said this many times. You spell blame, be lame. Be lame. You have to take responsibility for your own actions. Nobody has got you where you are except who? You, right? If you think, well, if it wasn't for my kids, I'd be better. If it wasn't for my wife, I'd be better. If it wasn't for my former wife, I'd be better. If it wasn't for my boss, I'd be better. If it wasn't for, if you live in Idaho and you belong to the militia, if it wasn't for the government, I'd be better, you know? Or if it wasn't for the environment, I'd be better. No, no. There's only one thing keeping you from being better. It's not the environment, it's not your boss, not your kids, not your wife, not your former wife, not your future wife. It's you. To accept full responsibility for one's actions and to realize that one's actions and one's own choices have put one where one is the second step in breaking a bad habit. The most famous, you know, cop-out in America is, it's not my fault. Has anyone ever heard anyone say that before? It's not my fault, right? We excuse and we accuse. We'll excuse ourselves of 1,000 faults, but boy, if we see one fault in someone else, we're there like a missile. We're there like a laser beam. We'll sit around and talk all day long about someone else's faults. But it never occurs to us to turn the microscope, to turn the beam, to turn the inspection upon our own self. We're vitally interested in other people's improvement programs, and we're perfectly willing to chalk out a program for them, but we won't do the same thing for ourselves. We hide and we hurl. We excuse ourselves and we tab other people. We tag other people. We hide from our own faults, and yet we hurl accusations, innuendos at other people. So the second step, BR, is to refuse to blame others. And the third step that we talked about, just going through these briefly and refreshing our memories, is to examine our lives. Stop pretending that we're all right. Practice honesty. If you want to get the kind of help that you need, if you want to get the kind of power and strength that you need, you have to stop fooling yourself. You have to be honest, you know. In our own society, there's a lot of pressure to conform to a certain standard of behavior and to comport oneself in a certain way. But that's not always the most honest way to act. People that are wrestling with bad habits need to work together with other people. It doesn't make you all right to pretend that you're all right. If you pretend that you're all right, you're not all right. You have to stop pretending that you're all right and get the help that you need in order to be all right. And I'm not talking about any special cases here. I'm talking about each and every one of us. I mean, we didn't come to this material world because we were perfect. And we're not staying here because we're perfect. We came here because we're imperfect. And we came here because we were weak as individuals. Because as individuals, we are susceptible to any kind of aberrant sinful behavior given the right set of circumstances. And when you examine your life, you have to conclude, if you're honest with yourself, that whatever you hear about anyone else doing, you could have done the very same thing given the same set of circumstances and the same compulsions. As soon as you say, I would never do that, you're setting yourself up, because God's going to show you exactly how you could do that and how you would do that and perhaps how you will do that in the future. So no one is above self-examination. We got into this thing ourselves, and we're going to need God's help, and we're going to need help of other empathetic people to get out of it. And so in that way, we need to examine our life. We need to see where we're weak, where we're vulnerable. And the reason we need to do this is because the heart is deceitful. The heart is very, very deceitful. So we need an outside opinion. We need to take others' help. And we talked last week about how criticisms and soliciting negative comments and constructive criticism is the best way that you can actually examine your own life. You know, how many people, does anyone know, and I'm sure most of us have had this experience, do you know someone in your family or your distant relative, cousin, someone who's an alcoholic, for instance? And everybody knows it. Everybody knows it except one person. Who's the one person that doesn't know who's an alcoholic? That person. He doesn't know it. And he refuses to accept it. The only way, he's never going to conclude, I'm an alcoholic. He needs to get, and oftentimes people who show loving concern do what they call interventions. They just sit down, they lock him in a room, and they get around and say, look, you are an alcoholic. And we're telling you this because we love you. And we don't want to sit idly by while you ruin your life. So in the process of examining your life, you solicit opinions, especially from those people that know you best. You take inventory, you take stock. What are my weaknesses and what are my strengths? And just because you have strengths in certain areas doesn't mean that you don't need to guard against those as well. You know, we gave the example last week of the teenage boy from Germany that flew a single engine plane and landed in the Red Square a few years ago. You know, they were so confident that this airspace was guarded that they overlooked, you know, a single engine plane coming in and landing on Red Square. They had all the bases covered for missiles and jet planes and heat signatures, but no one thought of a single engine propeller plane. So oftentimes, the greatest weakness is an unguarded strength. So B is begin today, R is to refuse to blame others, E is to examine your life, and A is to ask Krishna, which is a name for God, ask Krishna for help. Someone says, I've listened to the tapes, I've taken the seminars, I've read the books, I've prayed, I've cried, I've signed the paper, I've made the commitment. I cannot change. I cannot change. It is simply not within me to change. And I would agree with you. We would agree with you. You cannot change by yourself. You need to accept and to take advantage of the help of the Lord, because on your own, you'll not be able to change. Someone says, well, I don't want to be controlled by anyone. I want to keep my freedom. I want to do it my way. But if you look at your life, we're always controlled. In fact, the subject matter of a bad habit refers to our being controlled by a habit which is not in our best interest. Everybody's controlled by something. People are controlled by worry. People are controlled by guilt. People are controlled by money. People are controlled by popularity. People do everything they do in order to get fame, and thus they're controlled by fame. People are controlled by alcohol or drugs or even prescription drugs. People are controlled by others' expectations. Some people are controlled by other people. Some people are controlled by the dominant life principle of wanting to have fun. And some people are controlled by their hobbies. They can't wait to get into the workroom or get out. We were driving up to Salt Lake last evening, and it was like about 70 hang gliders up there. It was like the whole sky was dotted. So as the great theologian Bob Dylan says, everybody's got to be controlled by somebody. So your choice is not whether to be controlled or be not controlled. You know, the idea of the rugged, independent, self-reliant individual is a myth. None of us are independent. We all are dependent on air, on water, on sunshine, on relations. We're dependent in so many ways. So it's not a question of, am I going to be dependent or independent? We're going to be dependent, but the real question is, what is it that you're going to be dependent upon? What is it that you're going to base your life on, and what is it that you're going to center yourself on? Something's going to control our life. Now, if that foundation, if that center point of your life isn't God, then we call that an idol. Whether it's any of those things I mentioned before that controls us, that guides us, that's our dominant life principle, if it's not God, it's not rock solid. It's not strong enough to keep things together when the cataclysms, the hurricanes, whether they be financial or emotional, the earthquakes, whether they be relational, when the crises come, none of these things are strong enough to hold it together. So unless God is in the center of your life, you're setting yourself up to fall apart. And Krishna himself says, Sarvasya taham ridhi shani vishto matashmitir gyanam apavanam cha. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, I am situated within everyone's heart. From me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So he's in our heart already, but the problem is we've pushed him to the edge. And we've put our stuff and our things and our approval and our idea of success as the center thing. And then when we get in trouble, we call on God and we ask him to intervene. And then when we get out of trouble, we say, okay, God, could you just go to the edge of the room again? You know, we want to give him the problem, but we don't want to give him our lives. We want to keep control of our lives. We want to keep getting ourselves in trouble because we're not guided by the best life manager there is, God, the Supreme Lord. We want to be God. And then when we fall flat on our face, we want to invoke God to get us out of trouble. And when he does that, then we don't care for God anymore. So the problem is we want to give him our problems, but we don't want to surrender. Now, we've mentioned this many times before. If you want your life to be blessed 5%, then surrender to God 5%. If you want your life to be blessed 40%, then surrender to Krishna 40%. If you want your life to be blessed 80%, then surrender to Krishna 80%. But there's something that happens, something extraordinary, something magical, something phenomenal, that when you surrender, when you say, Lord, I don't just want you as a resident in my life. Lord, I want you as the president of my life. I want you to be my life manager. When that comes to the level of 100%, you don't just get blessed 10, 40, 80, 90. When you surrender completely and fully, and your life is 100% surrendered unto God, your life is blessed 5,000 times over. The math just goes stratospheric at that point. And that's what Krishna wants, and that's what is in our own best interest. Like any father, what's the best thing you want for your child? Like Radhakrishna for Nikunj. What's the best thing? What is in her interest? For her to listen to you 5% of the time? She's a two-year-old girl. Is that in her best interest to listen to you 5% of the time? 40% of the time? If she even gets 10% when she wants to do what she wants, she'll be in traffic. She'll be playing with matches. She'll be eating ice cream all day long and not any vegetables. But what happens when she's 100% dependent? Then she gets thousands of times more blessings than she could get. Whoa! That's why I always keep two. See, she gets thousands, exponentially more blessings by being under the control of her parents than she would. So we have to, aside from the other steps, we need to basically put up a sign that says, under new management. Krishna, I'm tired of being God. You're God. You've been God for a long time. You're darn good at it. You're a lot better than me. And so I am putting myself under new and much better management. Here is a quote from the Back to Godhead article. Back to Godhead is our Inner Society magazine. It's been going since the 60s. Not sure what year this article, but the article is called Free Will in You. Conditioning by the modes of nature is so strong that we tend to make the same choices again and again, even when we know our choice is detrimental to our long-range self-interest. Force of habit is extremely difficult to break. We just make the same choices again and again. Thus, for a given set of circumstances, our choices and actions become predictable. So why is it? Why is it that we fall back into the same bad habit? Maybe we can give them up for a week or a month. We get a patch, or we get desperate. We get some willpower, but eventually that willpower cannot carry us through, and we end up going through the same old predictable cycles. Well, there's one word that describes what happens when you ask Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for help. It's one word, and that is you finally get the power that the Borders books can't give you. You get the power that you don't have yourself. You get the power to break a bad habit that you otherwise would not be able to do. That's why we emphasize so much here in our Krishna Conscious Movement. We're called the Hare Krishnas because we emphasize chanting the names of the Lord. How do we ask the Lord? How do we bring the Lord into our life? How do we center our life around the Lord? Every scripture of the world recommends the very, very same thing. It is as clear as daylight. Our Father art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was God. In the Bible it says, chant the name of the Lord. In the firmament, in the heaven, chant, praise his name when you're happy. Praise his name when you're sad. Praise his name. This is the Bible, with drum, with cymbals, with lute and lyre. And I'm not even quoting my own scriptures. There's hundreds and hundreds of more quotes. Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Hari Nama. Nama means name. Hari means shout. Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Hari Nama. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 500 years ago, said, shout the names of the Lord, shout the names of the Lord, shout the names of the Lord. Kalo nasteva, 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 gatira nyata. In this age, the medicine for breaking the bad habits, the antidote to all the bad habits that are rife throughout the age, is to bring the Lord into your life through His holy name. On the absolute platform, the name of the Lord and the Lord are non-different. In the relative world, you can say water, 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 and you'll still be thirsty because the name water and the substance are different. But on the absolute platform, God and His name are non-different. Therefore, the Lord has Nam Namakari Bahuda Nijashava Shaktish. He has hundreds and hundreds of names. Why do you think God has so many names in so many different cultures? We have our own prayer, Vishnu Sahasranama. Vishnu is a name for God. Sahasra means thousand, and Nama again means name. So there's a prayer, 1,000 names of Vishnu in India. And many people chant it from memory. Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishat Karo, Bhuta Bhavi Bhavatkara, Bhuta Brit, Bhuta Brit, Bhutatma, Bhuta Bhavaha. That's one verse. There's 106 more. Why so many? If you go into Muslimism, there's 99 names of God. 99 names of God. And in Sikhism, in Guru Granth Sahib, Guru Nanak says, every page, chant the names of Krishna, chant the names of Rama. The name of the Lord is non-different from the Lord. So simply by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, you get the power that you otherwise would not have. And it's so simple. That's why the Lord has so many names and so many different cultures. He's begging us to take advantage of His presence, His power through His holy names. And who is incapable? Who is incapable of chanting the holy names of the Lord? Nikunj does it. She's, 2 years old. The parrot does it. You know, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's not going to do it consciously and daily as a daily. But he chants it. It's so easy. It's so ubiquitous. It's in every culture, every scripture of the world. So who is so unfortunate? Who is so unfortunate that they can't chant the names of the Lord? I've told this before. I remember in the 70s there was a cartoon that devotees were passing around. In fact, it came to Prabhupada's attention and he mentioned it in a couple of lectures. He thought it was pretty funny. I mean, sad but funny. There was a lady, and I guess she'd, you know, gotten turned on to chanting. And she was leaning over the breakfast table to her husband, or dinner table. And she was, with all of the energy and determination that she had, she was beseeching her husband, chant, chant, chant. And he was going tit for tat. He was just as insistently and earnestly looking back and says, can't, can't, can't. So who is my... He used the same energy. The same energy that she said, chant, chant. He used the same positive energy. He used the same negative energy. See what I'm saying? Can't, can't. So who is more unfortunate than someone who cannot chant the names of the Lord? Who says, well, I can't do that, or that's bogus, or that won't work, you know? Who will do that? It's like stepping onto a plank. How far can you walk on your own power in an hour, let's say? You can maybe walk 3-4 miles. But if you step onto a plane, then all of a sudden, and you're not even walking, except to go to the restroom like once every couple of hours, you walk, you go 3-4 miles. But when you associate, when you identify with the greater power, such as an airplane, you don't even have to walk anymore. You just sit down and chant your rounds and you're traveling 800 miles an hour. So the holy name of the Lord can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. It gives us unlimited power to break our bad habits. And the title of this slide is called LSD versus LDS. We're going to be controlled, right? So are you going to be controlled by LSD or LDS? And LDS could mean Latter-day Saints, but in our case we call it loving devotional service. This is also from a Back to Godhead article called Changing Our Standard of Happiness. In America, the authorities admitted, this is Prabhupada, we are spending so many millions of dollars, but we cannot stop this intoxication habit, the LSD habit. But as soon as one joins our movement sincerely, he can very easily give up these 4 abominable things. Now, these are the 4 principal habits. These are the pillars of sinful life. Nothing can wreck our lives and spoil our spiritual advancement more thoroughly and completely than these 4 pillars. So therefore, it's recommended that anyone who wants to get serious about Krishna consciousness, and especially by the time of initiation, one should have completely given up these 4 bad habits. Illicit sex, that means if you're married, you're faithful. If you're single, you're celibate. Meat eating, no one can make spiritual advancement while causing bloodshed and suffering to animals. I've been a vegetarian for 40 years and I'm not exactly wasting away. Intoxication, including coffee, tea, and cigarettes, and gambling. So people, Prabhupada says, how is it that devotees, and most devotees, in fact, not so much anymore, because there's a much higher class of people coming, as well as others too. But in the beginning, Prabhupada went to Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. First he went to Lower East Side in New York, and then he went to Haight-Ashbury. So his clientele, you might say, were people that did all of these things. They ate meat, they took LSD, they believed in, what was it called, free love, and what was the other one? Well, I don't know how much they were into gambling. But they were right into all 4, or at least 3, of these sinful activities. And yet they were able to give them up. They were able to give them up on the strength of LDS. They were able to give up LSD because they had the positive option of LDS. loving devotional service to the Lord. It's not just a question of repression or not a question of giving up, but it's a question of accepting something higher. When the good thing goes in the front door, the back thing goes out the back door. So K, B-R-E-A-K. And K is keep away from temptation. That's a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, that should be obvious, right? Although many people are trying to give up alcohol, still keep a wet bar. Now go figure that one out. You've got a wet bar in your house and you're trying to give up drinking. That's not going to work. Someone said if you hang around a barber shop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. So if you want to stop drinking, don't keep a wet bar. If you want to keep yourself pure in your mind, there are certain movies that you don't want to watch. I personally don't watch any movies because it's all agitating. It's all agitating. There's a subtext, even if you don't see promiscuity promoted actively or cigarettes promoted actively or drinking promoted actively, there's still a subtext there that keeps you far from peaceful when you allow your consciousness to be invaded by some Hollywood producer. And so I don't like to even watch any movies, but obviously there are certain movies which you might as well light a match with a powder keg if you want to keep yourself pure. Certain TV shows you don't watch like that. You don't wait until the moment that you're tempted to give in. You plan. We talked about this last week. Plans or glands? Either you'll be ruled by your plans or you'll be ruled by your glands. Now there are some people that they want to keep themselves pure, as it's mentioned in scriptures. And it's very, very clear in all the scriptures of the world, if you want to keep yourself eligible for God consciousness, for purified consciousness, then one of the bad habits that you have to get over is illicit sex. And it's very clear in every scripture, no sex outside of marriage. So if you're a teenager and your glands are raging and you have a date, you need to be aware that you're walking into a very, very hazardous circumstance. And the only way that you're going to negotiate that, navigate that, and keep your spiritual purity intact is plans. Plans and not glands. Otherwise, if you're in that moment of temptation, if you're in the back seat of the car, or you've just dropped her off at your doorstep, and you haven't already decided in advance that I'm going to act in a noble, pure way, and you haven't worked that out, you haven't envisioned it and planned it in your mind first, then the glands are going to take over. What do you want to do tonight? Well, I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Oh, let's make out. Okay, let's do that, you know. Plans or glands. So keep away from temptation. Make a plan so that you don't... At work, are you in danger of having an affair? Maybe you should change your job. Well, that's pretty extreme. I have to give up. Why don't I just be stronger? Why don't I just be more stout? Well, which is more important, salary or soul? Is it worth giving up your job and getting another job to save your soul? Is it worth continuing playing with fire in order to keep your salary? I don't think so. Some people might actually have to give up their jobs and look for another job in order to keep themselves in a spiritually surcharged, spiritually powerful mode. What about the friends that you're keeping? Are your friends supportive for a spiritual lifestyle? Or are they derisive? Do they make fun of you? And do they try to encourage you for drinking and smoking? And do they suck you into all kinds of unhealthy mental states? Then you might have to give up some of your friends and look for others. A common syndrome of people that come to Krishna consciousness. They come to Krishna consciousness. Maybe a group of teenagers come. And one person is interested. And they start coming back. And the friends, you never see them again. They may make jokes about it or something. But the friend, one fellow, he'll start coming back. Or one girl start coming back. And then after some time, he'll confide in us, my friends don't want to have anything to do with me anymore. My friends gave me an ultimatum. It's either us or the Krishnas. Well, at that point, I would advise go for the Krishnas. Because there's plenty of friends here, and those friends are not going to do you, they're not doing you any good at all. So you might have to keep away from temptation. Stay away from bees if you don't want to get stung. I put this little cartoon here, which of course you've had plenty of time to read, but I'll just read it for those who are only hearing the audio portion of this. The dog is has got the poodle, the female poodle, at their door, and he's thinking, here's the awkward part of the date. Do I shake her paw or sniff her goodnight? Ajamil. Ajamil was born up. Here's a diorama in our temple about the story of Ajamil. Have any of you seen that movie with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore called Ghosts? Anyone you see that? You know, where the dark guys come up from the underworld and take the bad guys away? He got the idea from this story about Ajamil in our own scripture called the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Ajamil was a Brahmin, and he was brought up very purely by Brahminical parents. He engaged his youthhood and his adolescence in serving the deity. However, when he got to puberty and his hormones started kicking in, one day he was out gathering flowers for the worship, and along the roadside he saw some low-class people. He saw a woman scantily dressed in the embrace of a man, and they were both intoxicated. So he fell because of having been exposed to that temptation. It was just at that time in his life when the hormones are raging, and then he got the exposure to that, and then he wasted his whole life until he was 84 years old. He went ahead, he married that prostitute, he robbed people, he extorted people, he even killed people to maintain his common law marriage, and he had children by her. And it wasn't until he reached the age of 84 years old and he was on his deathbed that he called out the name of Narayan, thinking of his youngest son, and there was an arrangement whereby he got a reprieve. He got another 2 years of life. That was only on the strength of chanting the holy names of the Lord. So here's a comment from the Srimad Bhagavatam about Ajamil. After that, one should give up the habit of sex life and leave home as a vanaprastha and then properly take sannyas. Ajamil, however, because of his association with a prostitute, lost all Brahminical culture and became most sinful, even in so-called household life. So if he had followed his Brahminical culture, he would have been properly married. He would have dedicated the middle 25 years of his life to being a faithful husband, to raising his children. And then around the time that his children are growing up and educated, he would have taken vanaprastha. That means he would have started to wean himself from family life and prepare himself to be sober and enter into the next life. But he didn't do that because he got sidestepped. He got cross-body blocked by temptation. Fortunately for Ajamil, he did chant the name of the Lord at the last moment, and there was a reprieve. But that's probably subject matter for another lecture. Now, you who are parents, Prabhupada, this quote we have here, Prabhupada talks about his own. Prabhupada is our guru. He's a pure devotee from birth. In his life, he never had any bad habits. No illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no meeting. Never in his life did this person eat meat or gamble or take even tea, or to speak of illicit sex. And the reason for that he attributes to good parenting by his father. And Prabhupada talks. This is Prabhupada as a youth on the right, and then this is his father here, Gaur Mohandas. Prabhupada says, "My father used to observe all the ceremonies befitting my position. Later on, these activities were suspended due to my association in the schools and colleges, and I became completely out of practice. But when I met my spiritual master, again, I revived my old habit. And the same playful deities became my worshipful deities in proper regulation. I am pleased that my generous father gave me the first impression, which was developed later into regulative devotional service by his divine grace." That's what you can do as parents. That's what you can do as parents. You can give them good training. You can educate your children. What is good association? What is bad association? You can instill them with values. And then when they go to college, the most dangerous situation in Armand is college. Thousands and tens of thousands of young people, Christian, Hindu, Muslim, who have otherwise good upbringing, who have good moral standards and good values, as soon as they get to college, what happens? Well, everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it. And then that sharpness, that keenness gets dulled and it gets blunted. And you find after some time, that's why Prabhupada said colleges are slaughterhouses. Because you take a nice, pure, saintly person, you put them in college, everybody's doing it. And they come out jaded and cynical. at the other end. I was up at the University of Utah putting up some posters for the Festival of India, and it was opening week. So I was going up to the student union. They had all the tables out there. And this is something Christianity has realized, how dangerous it is in college. So I counted no less than 6 tables on the walkway up there, Christian fellowship. Christian fellowship, recognizing that there is probably no place which spoils the character of more young people than college, modern secular colleges. And so the only antidote to that is the only way you're going to keep away from the various temptations there are to have good fellowship, good association of like-minded people. So Prabhupada is talking here and giving credit to his father for having given him good training. And even in his own life, there was a period of time when he didn't have the time or the facility to worship the deities and so on and so forth. But then he got back to it at the latter stage of his life. So if we have a period of time when we're forced, you see, by our duties and by our family responsibilities, we're forced to sort of get into the stuff of life and get our hands dirty. At least if we've gotten the right training, the right orientation, the right values when we're young, we can come out of the other side of that and still purify ourselves and get ready for the next life. It is said the end of life is a preparation, or should be a preparation, for the life that never ends. So we don't want to allow temptation to get a foothold. In that sense, we may have to change jobs, we may have to drop some friends, we may have to burn some bridges. This quote, we have the quote, "What profit is a man if he gains the whole world but loses an eternal soul?" 5,000 years ago, Narada Muni said the same thing. Chakram Shadanam Charanam Bhujamajam. What profit is a man if he gains the whole world but loses his eternal soul? And we'll just finish now with F. And leave R-E-E. Let's see, we did B-R-E the first week. We're doing A-K-F, right? So we're doing 3. There's 9, so it's going to work out good. 3 per week. And we'll conclude with this. This is the 6th step in the 9-step process for breaking any bad habit. Focus on something better. The more that you resist something, the more it persists. The reason diets don't work? The reason diets don't work is because you're always thinking of food. You're always thinking of food. And you're thinking of food, you're thinking of food, you're thinking of food. You know, oh my God, you know, it's 10 minutes to my next carrot stick. Whoa. 9, 8, 7, 6. You know, you're always thinking of food. That's the problem. They just don't work. So we actually need to reprogram our mind. We can't stop something. We can't just, like I said in the beginning, the guy's falling from a skyscraper, you can't just tell him stop falling. It's not within his control. You have to replace one thing with another thing. You can't say stop eating, but you can say eat something better. I gave this example. I had cancer a couple years ago, and I wanted to do everything I could in my lifestyle to be inhospitable. I wanted my body to be unfriendly territory for cancer cells. And they love sugar. They love sweets. So I stopped eating sweets. I reprogrammed myself to stop eating sweets. And it was hard the first week. It was much easier the second 3 weeks. And after 30 days, it was a habit. I'd replaced one habit with another habit. And I love apples now. And I love pears, and I love nectarines and bananas. I eat them like other people would eat candy bars. And I have no desire whatsoever for candy or for sweets. It is disgusting to me. It is disgusting to me. I had a spoonful. I'll tell you, I caved in last night because we have all these zucchinis from our garden. You know, huge zucchinis. I don't know if you saw our table down there. You're welcome to buy organic produce from the table there and help support the temple and move some of the zucchinis. But we had all these zucchinis, and I'm thinking, what are we going to do with these zucchinis? So we go to the program at Satish's house last night, and Harikesh has the same problem in his home. What is he going to do with all this? So he made zucchini raita, and he made zucchini halva. And I thought, and he actually said the bigger zucchinis are better for the halva. So because it's a little thicker, the smaller ones have too much water. So halva has to be more like a pudding consistency. So he made zucchini halva. I said, I have never heard of such a thing. And he said, would you like to try some? And I said, it has sugar in it. He said, yes. Well, I was thinking, I have to cook. I'm thinking, I'm going to cook that for the feast so we can get rid of it. So, okay, I'll make a sacrifice. And for me, it was a sacrifice. I wasn't thinking, oh boy, I get to taste some sugar. He'll testify. I wasn't eager at all. But very reluctantly and hesitantly, I said, okay, give me one spoonful. Give me one small spoonful so I'll see what it tastes like. So he gave me a spoon. I said, this is good. I cooked it for you, everyone. I hope you like it. Harry Case's inspiration, I spent the morning cooking halva. Only one thing went wrong. This has nothing to do with the lecture. Someone had put the sugar top on the salt bucket. And so the first cup, it's white granular stuff, but it's not sugar, even though it's labeled up. And as soon as I realized, I got most of it out. But then I asked Harry Case, I said, Harry Case, can you taste the halva and see if it's too, you know, see what it's like? And he tasted, he said, it's actually more salty than sugary. And I said, well, how could that be? There's 3 cups of sugar, there's only half a cup of salt. But anyway, the ladies have been working on it, and I hope you'll eat a lot of it because I made a huge pot of it. But the point is, you can reprogram yourself. You can change the channels, you know. If you're tempted to do a bad habit, don't just sit there and say, no, 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 no. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Do something different. Take a cold shower. They really do work, you know. Go for a walk, you know. Do some yoga. Yoga is great for reprogramming your mind and transcending all these different pushes and pullings like that. If you fill your mind with things that are noble, that are good, that are lovely, that are honorable, there will not be room for things that are ignoble, ugly, dark, and unseemly. Fill your mind with good. Now, someone may say, well, what's wrong with just thinking about it? You know, that's the big rationalization. I think a teenager, by the time they get to be 18 years old, they've seen 18,000 acts of violence on TV. And Hollywood will defend itself. Well, what you think about doesn't matter. You can think about something, there's no harm done, but it's a whole different thing about what you do. You're just fooling yourself. I remember the opponents, they said, real violence is real violence. R-E-E-L violence becomes R-E-A-L violence. Don't kid yourself. Your thoughts program your actions. Your thoughts dictate who you are and what you do. So you need to take very serious consideration of your thought pattern. Someone says, well, what's wrong with thinking of a little bit of this? Or what's wrong with one drink? Or what's wrong with seeing a couple of movies? Or what's wrong with it? It doesn't affect me. You are fooling yourself. It does affect you. In fact, it predicates everything that you do. Those influences build up and build up and build up. And then before you know it, you've got a habit. How many people, you have to keep the kids a little quiet. How many people consciously started out to become an alcoholic? How many people took their first drink and said, I'm going to be an alcoholic? How many people consciously took their first prescription drug with the purpose of becoming addicted? It just happened. It just happened. Took one, no harm. Another one, no harm. Think this, no harm. How many people are addicted to porn on the internet just because they happen to flirt with it a little bit? They didn't consciously think, I'm going to start out to get that addiction. But they weren't careful. They weren't careful, and they thought they could think one thing and be another thing. But it doesn't work that way. You're either striving to create good habits or you're allowing yourself to be overcome by bad habits. There's no middle, medium, neutral, no man's land there. The principle of replacement is at work here. There's no such thing as a vacuum. Nature abhors a vacuum. Someone says, well, my tank is empty. There's no gas in it. There may not be any gas in it, but there's air in it. There is no such thing as a vacuum. Someone says, well, my mind is empty. Your mind is not empty, although your kids may say that sometimes. Your mind is actually never empty. You cannot stop thinking of something. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, no man can do nothing, not even for a moment. Think about that. Na karmanam anarambam naishkamyam purushosnite. No man can do nothing, not even for a moment. So someone says, I'm just hanging out. I'm not doing it. I'm just killing time. You know, that's what you're doing. You're not just in a neutral state. You're killing time. You're killing your life. You see, and you're probably with your bad habits killing and damaging those people around you as well. There's no such thing as neutral. There's no such thing as a vacuum. We're either allowing ourselves to be filled up with garbage, or we're working actively to fill ourselves up with good, noble, lovely, and beautiful things. That's why we sit down every day in the morning. We read the Bhagavad Gita. We read it in the evening. We read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because we're consciously making an effort together to put the good in the front so that the bad will go out the back. Here it is stated here. The nature of the mind is not to be killed. And this will be the last slide for today. We've gone about 40 minutes or 35 minutes. The nature of the mind. It's important to understand the nature of the mind if we want to break bad habits. Mind or desire cannot be stopped. We're sentient beings. So desires are part and parcel of us. Either we'll have unseemly desires or we'll have uplifting desires. But we cannot be without desires. There's no neutral. There's either forward or there's reverse. But to develop a desire for spiritual realization, the quality of engagement has to be changed. The mind is the pivot of the active sense organs. And if the quality of thinking, feeling, and willing is changed, naturally the quality of actions by the instrumental senses, I assume that reads, will also be changed. So that concludes section 2 of Breaking Bad Habits. Last week we talked about B-R-E-A-K-F-R-E-E. Last week we talked about B, begin today. R is refuse to blame other people. E is to examine your life. And today we talked about three other aspects. The most recent, and the other one was ask Krishna's help. That was the A. And maybe you can help me out here. The E was, can't find the cursor. But anyway, this one is to replace the principle of replacement. To replace the bad with the good. And we'll stop there and we'll continue and we'll finish this series of talks on breaking bad habits next week with the conclusion. If you will, chant with me. It's written up there on the board. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.